This is Digital Story Podcast number 957, July 23rd, 2024. Today's theme is Behind the Scenes at the Olympics. I'm Derek Story. Opening ceremonies for the Paris Summer Olympics are this Friday. Certainly, this is a thrilling moment for athletes from all over the world who will compete for their countries. But it's also an exciting time for the media specialists who are preparing to capture those moments. I've been lucky enough to witness firsthand the Olympic experience. And to celebrate the Paris event, I will take you behind the scenes of the Beijing Summer Olympics. I hope you enjoy the show. So before I get to the firsthand experience, which was, I have to tell you, an experience of a lifetime, let me just remind you about the Beijing Summer Olympics. They were held from August 8th to the 24th in 2008. There were a total of 10,942 athletes from 204 National Olympic Committees competed in 28 sports and 302 events. This is the first time that China hosted the Olympic Games and the third time the Summer Olympic Games were held in East Asia, following the 1964 Olympics in Tokyo, Japan, and the 1988 Olympics in Seoul, South Korea. These were also the second Summer Olympics to be held in a communist state, the first being the 1980 Summer Olympics in the Soviet Union, with venues in Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, and Estonia. The 2008 Games were unprecedented in a few ways. 87 countries won at least one medal, which was really cool. Host nation China won the most gold medals, 48. The United States placed second in the gold medal tally, but won the highest number of medals overall, 112. The third place in the gold medal tally was achieved by Russia. I think the Summer Olympics are particularly exciting because of track and field, because of swimming, because of the team sports, basketball, notably for me. Just love basketball in the Olympics. So it was a fantastic event to be able to attend. So let's get to how did I get there? I mean, what happened while I was there and why it's so powerful for me even today. And especially when the Olympics roll around, that's when I really think about some of those moments I had in Beijing. First of all, let's just set the city itself, Beijing. So they worked very, very hard, as all cities do, I think, who are hosting the Olympics, have their best face showing. And it was beautiful. The city was in beautiful shape when we got there. I got there a few days before the Olympics because my primary job was working with Kodak and Apple in the media center. And I'll be talking a lot more about that in a few moments. But we arrived before the Olympics in order to make sure the media center was set up and ready for the photographers. So when that first event happened, we were ready to greet them so they could come in with their memory cards full of pictures, help them process them and turn them around as quickly as possible. The media center was inside of Olympic Village, and there were various levels of access allowed inside the village. So just because you could get inside Olympic Village doesn't mean you could go everywhere inside of Olympic Village. Now, those of us that had our passes, our media badges, access to Olympic Village, we also had access to basically anywhere in Beijing that we wanted to go. The subway system was free to anyone who was part of the Olympic event. And so, for instance, I could get on the subway and go to the Forbidden City, or get on the subway and go explore some other part of Beijing. And I just thought that was really cool. And just as a side note to all of that, when we were in the city and not in Olympic Village, we were really treated well, really treated well. The city had flowers hanging everywhere on all the streets. They had cut back business and industry within the area. So the skies were relatively clean, not the smog that you sometimes hear about in Beijing. The traffic was far less than I think normally you would see in Beijing. And what was really interesting to me was that I went back to Beijing 2 years later. I thought it was really interesting to compare how it was when I was there for the Olympics, and then 2 years later when it was just normal, you know, business as usual, big city. And I will say that obviously things were more beautiful during the Olympics, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But it was still a great city to hang out in even 2 years later, even without all the flowers hanging, you know, from baskets on all the streets and all that kind of stuff. So, and I think this happens a lot of times, the things that you do to get ready to host the Olympics, then, you know, that residue, all that goodness is still there even after the Olympics leave. The way that security was handled was fascinating. And of course, security is always a big topic with the Olympics. And those of you who have been around long enough remember some of the tough times that we've had at the Olympics in Munich, in Atlanta, you know, some of the things that just did not go right. And really, I mean, they just break your heart, right? Because the Olympics are about the celebration of countries coming together and competing, and not the heartbreak of any sort of terrorism. So security, such a big deal. And the way they handled security for us, I thought was fascinating. You have so many people coming in and out of Olympic Village all the time that I think it'd be very difficult to have security checkpoints on the perimeter of the village that everyone had to go through. So what they did was they put us in secure hotels that were outside the village, and all of our security clearances were handled there. And so what would happen is, so you would go through security at the hotel to even get into the hotel. Once you were inside the hotel, you were secure, you were cleared. And then what happened was when it was time to go to work inside the village, what they would do is that we would go through security inside the hotel again. It's like a second check, and go on a secure bus. And you know, you would be in the secure area inside the hotel lobby, and then literally you went through a tunnel directly to the bus, the secure bus, and then that bus took you to Olympic Village. And then once you were entering the village, you would have a light security check where the bus had to pass clearance, but we didn't all have to go through clearance again. Then once we were inside, the bus would take us to the area that we were clear for. In our case, it was the media center, and then we could just go right into the media center. So they made it fairly seamless. Now, there were times when something would just go wrong, either with, you know, for some reason, my badge wouldn't clear at the hotel, and there'd be some sort of issue, some sort of delay, and we'd have to sort that out before I could get on the bus. But generally speaking, it went well. Now, once you were inside your secure area at the Olympics, you could roam about freely. Obviously, you had to keep your badge on all the time. And the media center at the Summer Olympics, it was like a city unto itself. It was, you know, this huge building inside. In addition to where the photographers did their work, there were places to eat, there were stores, there were all sorts of different services. You could exchange money there. You know, all that kind of stuff was available. And, you know, for me, one of the biggest important things inside the media center was a true-to-life McDonald's. And you would think, oh, wow, why would you be excited about a McDonald's? Well, a big part of the reason was that, for me anyway, Chinese food in China is a lot different than Chinese food here in the U.S. And so I did not like the Chinese food in China nearly as much as I do the Chinese food here in the U.S. And in fact, I was losing weight. I lost a total of 15 pounds in the 2.5 weeks I was there in Beijing. And that McDonald's inside the media center was like, oh my God, okay, I'm going to have, and you're just like, okay, what am I going to have today? You know, and suddenly that meal became the highlight of your culinary day because you knew, okay, I'm going to have this one good meal here at McDonald's inside the media center. And whatever else happens the rest of the day, at least I had this. At least I have this under my belt. So that McDonald's was really important. And sort of a related side note, the way that our shifts worked once the Olympics started, we would work back-to-back eight-hour shifts, and then we would get 8 hours off. And during that 8 hours off, you know, we could, you know, do whatever we wanted. And a lot of times what they'd do is they'd put our 2 8-hours off back-to-back, and then, you know, we would have back-to-back shifts again. So some if you weren't too tied to sleep, you could actually do a lot of exploring in your time off. And of course, with the badge, you could get on the subways and travel around fairly freely. It didn't cost you anything. I think I had been there for about a week and a half, and I was out exploring, and there was a Kentucky Fried Chicken in Beijing that I didn't know about. And I just sort of stumbled across it. And I went in there, and it was really busy. It was crazy busy, but I didn't care. And so I had a true Kentucky Fried Chicken meal, and it tastes just like the Kentucky Fried Chicken here in the States. And I have to say that that Kentucky Fried Chicken meal that I had about a week and a half into my work in China was the best chicken dinner I've ever had. I will never forget how good that tasted. You know, meals aside, even with the occasional McDonald's and then the one Kentucky Fried Chicken, I just couldn't eat enough to keep from losing weight. And it was hot, just so hot. I mean, it was talcum powder hot all the time. I just had Gold Bond that would, you know, we would just cover ourselves in Gold Bond before going outside. So that didn't help much either, because your appetite kind of, at least my appetite, goes down a bit in the heat. Now, inside the media center itself, it was fascinating to me. There were, I don't know how many computers. I think there were over 100 workstations, maybe up to 150. A good mix of both Windows and Mac workstations. And they were preloaded with software and all the sort of basic software that you would expect. Obviously, Photoshop was on there. Remember, this was 2008. Photoshop was on there. Photo Mechanic was on there, because Photo Mechanic, very popular with the Olympic photographers, especially at that time. We had Aperture on there, and that was part of the reason why Apple was helping to sponsor the Media Center, was because they wanted to get Aperture in front of these professional photographers and let them take a look at it. And then there was various other pieces of software on there as well. And we were all trained to, you know, work with the photographers in all the different software that was loaded on there. So Photoshop proficient, Photo Mechanic proficient, obviously Aperture proficient, the computer itself proficient. And so we were there wearing uniforms that were easily identified. We wore black t-shirts that had logos on them. And if anyone had an issue at all, they could just flag us over there, just wave us over, and then we would help them resolve their issue. Now, I thought it was interesting because part of our job, by the way, Kodak was the co-sponsor of the Media Center, and they also, they had a film lab, and I think it was the last time there was a film lab inside an Olympic Media Center, and it was also the last time that I think Kodak was an official sponsor, but they had the film lab in there, so we could handle film if someone came in with film, and we could scan it as well. Even in 2008, I thought that was fascinating, because almost everyone at that point was covering sports with digital just because of the rapid turnaround. Another thing that was very interesting is that both Nikon and Canon had extensive service and the loan equipment in there for their professional photographers. So if you shot Canon or Nikon, which almost everyone shot one or the other, if you had any issue at all with your camera, with your lenses, any of that sort of stuff, you could go right over to the Canon or Nikon service center there inside the media center, have your camera repaired, get a substitution until the repair was ready. If you needed a different lens for an event that you hadn't anticipated, they had loaner lenses. I mean, they had everything, and it was extensive. The amount of equipment that both Nikon and Canon shipped over there and had there was mind-boggling. Now, one of the things I learned quickly working inside the media center was that, in general, photographers weren't really interested in learning anything new. And I'm not surprised by this at all, right? I mean, they are under tight deadline. They're stressed out. Talk about pressure. It felt like they were under as much pressure as the athletes themselves. So saying, hey, you know, you want to try out aperture for this shoot that you got to turn around in 45 minutes? Instead of doing it your normal way, you know, they would just look at you like you had, you know, eight eyes or something. Like, are you kidding me? However, that being said, that on the in-between moments, they were piqued. Their curiosity was piqued. And sometimes if they didn't have another shoot for 4, 5, 6 hours, whatever, they would just come inside and hang out inside the media center. And then we would have these informal conversations. And that was the time really that we could show them aperture and some of the other pieces of software that they were interested in that they hadn't been using. And I really loved those off moments. I would have to say that those off moments are one of the things that inspired me to have the labs the way we do on our physical workshops for a digital story. Because that idea of having 4 or 5 of you sitting around talking shop, maybe learning something new in that kind of setting, it was really stimulating. And I learned a lot. I got to know the photographers. I got to understand a lot about their world, especially when they were working at the Olympics. Those were fantastic moments for me. I really enjoyed them a lot. Now, you would get tired because if you're working back-to-back shifts, even with breaks, you know, 2 8-hour shifts, and sometimes you would have, you know, half of the media center full. The number of events were big that particular day. So it was really taxing. And then, of course, like I said, you're not really eating that much. And so it was sort of physically, it was a wild experience. Now, the other cool thing that came with that particular job we had is that we were able to get out in the venues. We were assigned venues, and we were able to shoot as well. And I think they did that for us so that, you know, we just weren't in the media center all the time. And they actually did use our shots as well. So I just thought that was, whoever thought of that or put that together, that was brilliant. And it gave us a break, you know, because it was during our normal shift. So for instance, mine, I got a really good break on the what I got to cover, which was women's volleyball and women's beach volleyball, to be specific. I mean, what a fun sport to cover. And it was absolutely a blast there at the Olympics. We were very competitive and, in fact, won the gold medal that year in Beijing. And it was just fantastic. It was just fantastic. And so we were out there shooting. It's funny, the camera that I used for the Olympics was a Canon 5D. Not a 5D Mark II or Mark III or Mark IV. I mean, we're talking about 2008, right? It was a Canon 5D, just a 5D. And had a 300 millimeter lens that I used. And there we were shooting beach volleyball. But it was just a great event. And I think another reason why that was part of our gig was so that when the photographers did come in and they needed our help, we had a better understanding of how they were. We had a better understanding of maybe how tired they were, you know, especially in, like in my case, you were out in the sun working. We had a feel for how many pictures they would have. We had a feel for, you know, just about everything. In other words, after, you know, we had lived that experience out shooting in the venues, then we could better relate to those coming in for our help. And I just thought that was brilliant. And not only for me personally to be able to experience that and to be able to photograph an Olympic event over numerous days, right, over many days, it was also just a great experience and understanding what these photographers go through in this situation. And of course, we had to have separate credentials for everything. So even on the opening ceremonies at the Bird's Nest there inside Olympic Village, there were credentials that allowed you in the general area of the Bird's Nest, and then there were credentials that allowed you inside the Bird's Nest, and then there were credentials that allowed you into specific areas inside the Bird's Nest. And I thought that that was really interesting, and I could not wrangle a credential to get me inside the Bird's Nest for the opening ceremonies. I did get the credential that allowed me on the outside, and a picture that I have on my wall here in the studio, and a picture that I've used a lot, were the fireworks display coming out of the top of the Bird's Nest from the outside. And I just love that picture. It was at night. The Bird's Nest itself, the venue, was absolutely beautiful. The fireworks show was spectacular. As you may recall, the fireworks for the Beijing Olympics were just unprecedented for their time. And those were the shots that I was able to get. So when you're there, depending on, you know, who you're working for and what you're allowed to do and all that stuff really determines your Olympic experience. It's not like you get to say, okay, I'm going to work the Olympics and you just get to roam around and do anything you want. It's not that way at all. Yeah, if you're working the Olympics, you have a number of different credentials that allow you to different spots, and then you're prohibited from going to different areas. All the photographers were given photo vests, and those were branded Kodak. And the photo vests are really cool. I have mine, of course, still. I'll always have it. They were very much the kind of photo vests that you would expect to have, where they had all the different pockets. They were vented really nicely because that way you could just wear a t-shirt and your photo vest. And depending on what event you were shooting, you may or may not have to bring an external bag. You could just have your long lens already on your camera around your neck, your supplemental lenses, your extra batteries, your cards and stuff in the photo vests, and just navigate around that way. All the photo vests were numbered. So not only were your credentials very specific, but your photo vest is very specific too. And the numbers are big so that they can see them from a distance. And so you did not loan your vest to anyone else, nor did you borrow anyone else's vest. That vest was really considered part of your credentials, and you kept those two very safe and together and did not loan them or let them out of your sight, really. We would lock up our photo vests and stuff when we were working in the media center. We would have them locked up until we left and were ready to use them again. But I really liked having them. And it's funny, I don't use a photo vest normally. I haven't really since the Olympics. But for some reason, during those 2.5 weeks in China, they were the perfect thing because I just didn't have to carry a big old bag around. I would have my long lens on my camera and then everything else was in the vest. Interestingly enough, the computer that I had in China at that time, it was fascinating to me now as I look back on it, I had a white plastic MacBook. That was my personal computer that I had in China. Of course, I was only working with the files from a Canon 5D, which I believe they're 12 megapixel files. I'm pretty sure they're 12 megapixel files. So my little white MacBook running both, there wasn't Photos for macOS then. It was either iPhoto or Aperture on the white MacBook. Now, of course, I could use also the workstations in the media center. Although the only time I did were for the official shoots, I would use the workstations then. For my own personal photography, and I shot a lot of personal photography. I went to the Forbidden City. I went all over the place around Beijing. So all of that photography, I just managed on my little white MacBook. But it just cracks me up thinking about the gear that I had in Beijing compared to the gear that I'm carrying today for an event that was far more important than anything, you know, that I would be shooting today. You know, that little MacBook, it chugged along beautifully. It did really well, as did the 5D. And by the way, I had kind of a hard time letting go of that 5D When it was time, I did upgrade to the 5D Mark II, and I needed to sell the 5D to, you know, kind of make that all happen. And there was a little nostalgia tied to that 5D, the camera that I got to use to shoot the Olympics. So we only worked through a little over half the Olympics, and then what they did, they brought in a fresh crew. There was a little bit of overlap. We would train the crew coming in, get them all up to speed, let them know. By that time, we knew the photographers really well. So like some photographers had, you know, certain things they wanted or set up a certain way or all that. So we were able to kind of give them all those personality profiles and those special needs, which was, you know, I'm sure really helpful to the crew coming in. And then they worked the rest of the Olympics and then the closing ceremonies. And then they had to close down the media center. So I was there in the first shift where we set up the media center and worked the first part of the Olympics. And then they were there for the second half. The last thing that I want to talk about on this experience is that when we flew home from Beijing, we flew on United, which was the official Olympic carrier for the U.S. And it was just craziness. And I did not expect this at all. You know, you get on the plane, you know, they set up my plane reservation and all that stuff. All that stuff was coordinated by, you know, Kodak and Apple. And, you know, you get on the plane and you're walking down the aisle to your seat and there's an Olympian with a silver medal hanging around her neck. There's an Olympian with a gold medal hanging around his neck. And you're going, wow, I'm flying home with these Olympic athletes, you know, who had already competed and were ready to go home. And they're like in their warm-ups with gold medals and silver medals and bronze medals hanging around their neck, chatting with each other. And I was going, man, I mean, I guess it's cool if, you know, during the flight, I go up and introduce myself as a photographer and ask if I could take a picture. And so I did that. And it just came off great. They loved telling me their story. They would pose with their medal. They were just beaming, as you can imagine, you know, so high and excited from their Olympic experience. And to be on the plane filled with these people, it was just amazing. I mean, the plane ride home was as exciting as the Olympic events themselves, just because there was so much positive energy and excitement and joy on that plane, unlike normal flights. By the way, that flight coming back, I had a wedding on the very same day that I was arriving at the shoot, and I didn't want to cancel on the bride because I got the Olympic gig after I had already agreed to the wedding. But because of the time difference between China and the U.S., I could leave on the same day, be back at my studio, change gear, take a shower, and I still had like 3 hours to get to the wedding because of the time difference. Believe me, the bride was not crazy about that at all. She did not like the fact that on the morning of her wedding, I was in China and flying home to shoot her wedding. I made it to her wedding in plenty of time. I had a great shoot. As you can imagine, I was sharp as a tack photographically, shot a great wedding, and everything came off great. But I remember her trepidation, and I don't blame her at all, because so many things could have gone wrong. Fortunately, nothing went wrong, and we had a great wedding event as well. So I'm very excited about the Paris Olympics that are starting. I'm going to enjoy watching the photographers. You know, I look for them in the coverage. I'm going to, of course, be rooting for USA basketball. Very excited about the team we have and the other sports as well. Women's gymnastics looks like it's going to be a fantastic meet. All of this is very special to me, the Olympics, not only from having my Olympic experience, but also I loved the Olympics before I got to go and work them, and obviously I've loved them ever since. I can't wait to see how the Paris Games come off. I think it's going to be fantastic. And of course, I'll be cheering for my Olympic comrades, especially the men's basketball team. Can't wait. I'm going to watch every one of those games. Hope you enjoyed the insights and a trip down memory lane with me. Camera sales hit highest level for 3 years, driven by mirrorless and compact rebound. This is a story that is on DP Review, and I have the link to it in the show notes. This is good news. I mean, this is really good news. Let me just read you a little bit about what they have to say here. The latest industry figures from the trade body CIPA show more cameras were shipped between January and May 2024 than in the same periods of 2022 or 2023. All 3 years are well below figures achieved before the COVID pandemic, but at least suggests the industry may have reached a sustainable scale. The figures show 2.3 million interchangeable lens cameras were shipped, a 9.8% rise over the same period of 2023, and 11.9% up on 2022. Meanwhile, cameras with built-in lenses were up 7% compared to the same period of last year, leaving them 4.2% lower than 2022. The value of ILC sales grew 28.6% compared to the last year. Meanwhile, the value of fixed-lens camera sales rocketed by 34.7%, which suggests that at least some growth in the compact market is being driven by high-value cameras such as Fujifilm's X100 VIX. Unsurprisingly, the shift from DSLR to mirrorless continued, with mirrorless cameras making up 83.7% of ILC shipments by volume and 92.9% by value. In its annual results posted in May, Nikon upped its prediction of the size of the ILC market from 6.1 million cameras to 6.2 million cameras for the current financial year, which would represent a 6.7% increase over the 2023-2024 figures. So good news indeed. I think the market has made it through a very tough period, not only in terms of the pandemic, shipping shortages and all that stuff that happened, but also the transition to mirrorless and all the other things that are happening. It's good to see these numbers. I don't want skyrocketing numbers. I mean, I only think we should be buying cameras that we need, but I do like seeing the steady numbers and the steady growth upward. That gives the camera manufacturers a little bit more operating room to try different things, to maybe release a few more models, all that kind of stuff. Good news, and I'm really happy to see it. This $479 smart telescope lets anyone shoot beautiful astrophotos. This story is on Petapixel. I thought it was really interesting. I have a link to it in the show notes. Smart telescopes are all the rage thanks to the ease in which novice stargazers can use them to capture beautiful photos of the cosmos. However, they're often expensive. That's where Dwarf Labs' Dwarf 3 smart telescope comes in, priced at under $500. The Dwarf 3 smart telescope is billed as the world's most portable and all-around smart telescope by its creator and promises that with its fast and easy setup, users can begin taking photos in just minutes. The smart, lightweight telescope weighs just 1.3 kilograms, 2.86 pounds, and can easily fit in a small bag. Its base has a tripod thread, allowing it to be quickly set up in the field. The telescope works alongside the new Dwarf Lab app, which lets users capture photos in a single tap, no fussing with exposure settings, calibration, or focus. However, for advanced user, the app also offers precise manual adjustments to dial in the desired look. The app includes a library of cosmic objects, including celestial bodies like the moon or planets, specific stars, and nebulas, which the smart telescope can track in the sky over a more extended exposure period, up to a minute, allowing for sharp, detailed photos with relatively low noise. And then they go in more to the specifics of it. Again, I have the link in the show notes. And then they show some pictures captured with this thing. And it looks like a video cam from a few years ago, you know, when video cams were just kind of these standalone units, like a handy cam that you would shoot with one hand. It looks like one of those, and you can put it on a tripod and you control it with the app and it just does its thing. And I am really tempted to test one of these things. I think it'd be fantastic for our workshops, right? Just to be able to go out and shoot with one of these things and then come away with stars, even if you didn't have a lot of astrophotography experience. So anyway, I'm pretty intrigued by this. The $479 smart telescope, the Dwarf 3 smart telescope, and I have a link to the article in the show notes. Before I stick here, a little virtual camera club business. Those of you that subscribe to the Nimble Photographer newsletter know that I wrote about the Canon R1 last week and Canon's preparations of that camera for the Paris Olympics and some of the tripwires that they may be encountering. All that being said, we're looking at an interesting and possibly groundbreaking camera. And I'm going to be curious to see how many of these cameras are being used at the Paris Olympics, and I like to see the shots they capture. But that announcement happened on Wednesday after the podcast, and I was able to cover it Thursday in the newsletter. That's the wonderful advantage of the newsletter, is that it does come out a few days later. If you want to subscribe, it's easy to do. Just go to the digital story, click on the newsletter link, or Nimble Photographer, click on the link, subscribe for free, and it shows up in your inbox every Thursday. I want to give a big shout out to our Patreon members, those that are part of the Inner Circle, who support this podcast month in and month out. Currently, we have conversations going around a photo challenge, the dog days of summer, and the shots coming in are just fantastic. And good conversations around those photos. And I also have a poll going, which has generated a lot of chat as well. Asking them what's their favorite season for outdoor photography. And some of the answers surprised me, which I love. I love, you know, you think you know what the answer is going to be, and it's not necessarily that answer. And that's just part of the fun of hanging out in the inner circle, learning about what other photographers like and what they're working on and what they're taking pictures of. If you want to become a member of the Inner Circle, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can sign up there, and the next thing you know, you'll be receiving an invite to our Inner Circle site on Derek's Story Online. And there's where you get to hang out with all the cool kids. And a big thanks to our Patreon members for supporting this podcast. And finally, I want to acknowledge our good friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story, the folks who are going to be helping me with this upcoming inkjet photography workshop in August. It's right around the corner, boys and girls. Man, am I ready? Drew's ready. He's locked and loaded. He's going to be doing an open Q&A. That's right. You're going to have an open Q&A with the master himself, first week of our inkjet photography workshop. What a way to kick off that show. That's the kind of support that we receive from Red River Paper, in addition to their fantastic printing paper, their excellent service, and all the knowledge that they have on their site. If you want to learn more and order some paper, just click on the Red River Paper tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, and a big thanks to them for supporting this community. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm so excited about the Olympics. I can't wait. I'm working on some cool stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.